You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, it's summer camp season. We'll learn about the history of summer camps here in Wisconsin and then ask for your favorite summer camp memories.
First, Blair Braverman wanted to challenge herself, and she wanted to do it in a place that she's always been drawn to, the North. So she spent years in places like Norway and Alaska to figure out how to trust herself and along the way to discover her passion for dog sledding.
Today, she's the author of the book on her experiences, Welcome to the GD Ice Cube, Chasing Fear and Finding Home in the Great White North.
Blair Braverman lives and writes in Wisconsin, where she works with her team of sled dogs in the winter. Blair, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thank you.
Well, I want to know what first drew you to these cold zones of the world, places like Norway and Alaska.
Oh, you know, that's the one question I should have a good answer for by now, but I grew up in the desert in California, and I wasn't quite at home there, and I wanted something that was totally the opposite. I just felt like I was this kid in California who should have been a polar explorer.
And it sounds like that's a big part of why you did this, why you went to these places. And we're not just talking, when we say Norway, I don't mean you were in Oslo. I mean you were in the far northern part of the country and in a tiny little town because you wanted to test yourself there in a way and to learn to trust yourself. So why did you feel like that was the place that would allow that all of that stuff to happen for you?
You know, it was sort of by accident. I knew I wanted to go up north, and I ended up going to a folk school in northern Norway when I was 18, which is a year-long public boarding school where the students learned dog sledding and Arctic survival for a year. Slept outside every night in ice caves and igloos. You know, we'd be out for days or weeks at a time in 30 or 40 below. And I loved it. I felt like I could finally have a kind of faith in myself that's tough to hold on to when you're a teenage girl. And so even when I left, I looked back on that place, you know, even less for the landscape and more for who I had felt like when I was there and, you know, the competence and trust in myself I had developed.
And I want to know more about what that time at that folk school was like, because that's where you got your first introduction to dog sledding. Who was your teacher, and what were those first moments like?
Yeah, my teacher was a Sami man named Talik, is his name in the book. And, you know, we started out on wheels. That's how the dogs pull you in the fall. And it's terrifying. If you've never been dog sledding before, and I highly recommend it, it is terrifying to start because the dogs are so excited and they're leaping and they're so strong and it's utterly out of control. And so I got onto this like lurching, rattling cart with eight dogs in front of it, and I was sitting and Talik was driving, and it's just like this overwhelming noise and chaos. And the moment they start running, the moment you untie the cart, it's just silent. And you can just see these dogs sort of churning forward and their legs pumping up and down, and they're so happy. And I, it felt like something I'd been looking for and hadn't known, you know, like this very powerful, visceral love for this activity right away, love for the dogs.
So is it about the movement through the landscape, or is it about more about the dogs and doing something in tandem with this animal that you feel this connection with?
I mean, those go so hand in hand. It's about the dogs. It is, you know, if it wasn't about the dogs, I'd be a cross-country skier or a snowmobiler. But it is the teamwork with the dogs. It's the fact that, you know, their lives are depending on you and your life is depending on them in a very real way. So it's this camaraderie that has a lot at stake and is also really powerful for that reason.
And it sounds like during that time at this folk school in Norway, you were in some pretty extreme situations. I mean, just sleeping outside in an ice cave or an igloo, I think might be extreme enough for some people. But there was a story you tell about how you went out in a storm, you were kicked off some land, and you had to mush overnight through a storm. And it sounds like you weren't even sure you were going to make it through that night. What was that like?
we didn't know where we were going. We were essentially kicked out of Finland. Kicked out of Sweden, and we had to get to Finland in a blizzard overnight. And I was with one other girl, one other student there, and six dogs, and we set out into the blizzard, and we lost track of everybody else. The snow was so thick that we started on a trail, and within an hour, the dogs could hardly walk through it. It was up to their chest, and so we had to take turn walking in this sort of swirling darkness in front of the team of dogs in a direction that we didn't know where we were going. And we thought about camping down, building a snow shelter for the night. But in a situation like that, whether or not this was the right move, there's a lot of comfort in moving forward, even if you don't know where forward is. And we went like that through the night. And as the sun didn't rise up there, but as sort of a light was creeping over the horizon, we ended up at this sort of underground camp, or this round building that was half underground that was a reindeer herding camp. And we were able to tie up the dogs and feed them. It was at least 40 below. We're like, your breath is just, you can't even see through it. And just as we'd gotten the dogs tied down, the reindeer migration passed through, just this sort of sweep of herds as far as you could see, just the landscape turning brown. So that was just one of many moments that has stayed with me the most from that year.
So how did you know where you were going? Did you just trust the dogs? Did the dogs were they able to sniff their way there, or were you just lucky?
The dogs were going somewhere. Now I look back, and I have sled dogs now, and I'm training for the Iditarod, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, I would not do that again. I don't endorse the choices I made as an 18-year-old trying to get across the tundra. But at the time, we just trusted the dogs because they knew a lot more than we did, and it worked out. They did know where they were going, as it turned out.
We're talking with Blair Braverman right now. She is the author of the new memoir called Welcome to the GD Ice Cube, Chasing Fear and Finding Home in the Great White North. And she lives and she trains dogs in Mushers and Mountain, Wisconsin. And Blair, that story, I think about that. I think about myself and I think there's no way that I could ever do that. Can you describe what that sort of experience, what dog sledding, mushing demands of you physically and mentally?
It's physical, but it is much more mental, and it's a kind of endurance that's less, I don't even know the term here, but a sort of endurance of energy, less about physical activity, if that makes sense. You have to be on for so many hours and responsible for all these lives that are with you. And, when you stop, when the dogs are resting, the human doesn't rest. I don't rest when my dogs are resting. As soon as they lie down to sleep and maybe I make them beds out of straw if we're on a long trip, or I cover them in blankets, right away it's my job to start melting snow for water and cooking their food and taking off their booties and massaging anyone who might be stiffening up. And, so in a five-hour break, the dogs will sleep for 5 hours pretty much as soon as they've eaten, and I might get to lie down for 20 minutes. So it's pretty demanding in that sense. You see people cross the finish line after long trips or races, and the dogs look great. They look like they could do it over again, and the human looks like they've aged 20 years.
Wow. Well, you've said that mushing is a male-dominated sport, and when you were beginning, your teachers, like we talked about, your first teacher, Talek, they were men. What was it like being a woman in that arena when you were first starting out?
Yeah, I started out more as a tour guide, and so now that I am more competitive in the sport, I do feel like I'm more a part of a community, and I can see those dynamics. It's one of the only sports where men and women compete together. The only other two that I know of are sailing and equestrian. So it's really interesting in that way. I've mostly learned from men. It's only lately that I've been able to find really great female mentors in the sport, women who I've gotten to know personally, who I look up to so much. But I, overall, I'm the primary musher at my kennel, and I always try to get girls involved. That's one of my main priorities, because I think it's such a good sport for girls. You know, the girls who work with my dogs are anywhere from, the youngest one is 6 or 7 and up through their teens, and you can just see their body language change just from working with these animals. They have to stand taller. They have to speak in a deeper voice, and even that's something girls are sort of can develop habits of speaking in a high voice and a sort of lilt, and they have to project confidence for the dogs, even if they don't necessarily feel it. And then I think that that confidence follows the body language, and they're relying on themselves. It's you know, it's good for anyone. I think it's a great sport to grow up in, but it really warms my heart to see girls getting into it.
Does the voice that you're talking to me with right now, is that the same as your mushing voice?
No.
Can I hear your mushing voice? Can you do it on the radio? What would you say?
If we're starting, I would say, ready? All right. And then to slow down, I would say, ooh. And if they're doing something that I don't like, I can often correct them with a very quiet sound, like a uh-uh, just like that. Or I'll growl at them if I need to really give them a message. And actually, I'm embarrassed to growl on the radio because my growl isn't very good, and it's really like one of my priorities is to get better at growling.
You're working on your growl.
I really am. If I'm driving alone for a long period of time, I'll just be growling.
I would love to hear a tape of that, but I guess I can't. I want to ask you, we just have a tiny bit of time left, but you're training for the Iditarod. What is your training schedule like, and what are you hoping for? Just about 30 seconds here.
Yeah, I just started training this year, and I've got a couple hundred miles of qualifiers under my belt, and I'll be doing another 500 miles with my dogs this winter. So I'm hoping to be ready by spring 2018. And I actually have puppies now who may pull me across Alaska, which is amazing to think about.
Fabulous. Well, we'll check in with you maybe after the race. Blair, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you.
That was Blair Braverman. She's the author of Welcome to the Ice Cube, Chasing Fear and Finding Home in the Great White North. She writes and she mushes in Mountain, Wisconsin.
Coming up, we'll talk about the history of summer camps here in Wisconsin. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.